Welcome to our deep dive today, and we are going to be diving deep into spiking neural networks.
Yeah.
SNNs.
SNNs, that's right.
It's really a fascinating frontier in AI.
It is.
That kind of pushes beyond traditional neural networks and takes inspiration directly from
the brain.
The human brain, yeah. And so that's kind of
our muse.
That's a great way to put it. And we're going to be using this AI Weekly report briefing document as our guide today.
Okay.
And our mission is to unlock the secrets of SNNs.
Right.
You know, everything from their inner workings to their real-world applications, and we'll even explore the hurdles that they face.
Right.
And the exciting possibilities that lie ahead. So buckle up, because this is where AI gets
really interesting.
Really interesting. I mean, imagine building AI as efficient as the human brain.
Oh, yeah.
Running on just a sliver of the energy.
Absolutely. It's mind-blowing when you consider how much power traditional neural networks
guzzle.
I mean, training a large language model can have the same carbon footprint as a small country.
Oh, wow.
So SNNs offer a more sustainable path, and it all comes down to how they process information.
So how do they do it? What makes SNNs so energy efficient?
Well, instead of relying on constant signals, SNNs use these bursts of activity called spikes.
Okay.
It's like sending Morse code instead of a continuous radio wave.
Okay.
Each spike represents a tiny bit of information, and by carefully timing these spikes, SNNs can process information incredibly efficiently.
Yeah. So, like, the brain has figured out the ultimate energy-saving strategy.
That's right.
But before we dive deeper into the world of SNNs, let's take a super quick detour through the evolution of traditional artificial neural networks. I'm talking perceptrons, MLPs, CNNs, RNNs, you know.
The whole gang's here.
The gang's all here.
Right. Those are the foundations. I mean, think of perceptrons as the first stepping stone.
Okay.
Way back in the 1940s.
Oh, wow.
Then came multi-layer perceptrons or MLPs, which added more complexity, you know, like extra gears in a machine. They were followed by convolutional neural networks or CNNs, masters of image processing.
Right.
They're behind things like facial recognition and those cool filters on your phone.
Right.
And then came recurrent neural networks or RNNs, which are like memory wizards. They excel at tasks that involve sequences like language translation or speech to text.
Okay, so ANNs have come a long way, but why the shift to SNNs? Is it all about energy efficiency?
Energy efficiency is a huge factor, especially as AI becomes more integrated into our lives.
Right.
We need AI that can run on our phones, wearables, and even tiny sensors, not just in giant data centers.
Right.
SNNs offer that possibility.
So we're talking about AI that's not just smart, but also incredibly energy conscious.
Absolutely.
But let's zoom in on the heart of these SNNs, the spiking neurons themselves. How do they work?
Okay, so picture a neuron as a tiny electrical circuit.
Okay.
It receives inputs from other neurons.
Yeah.
And those inputs are like tiny currents flowing into the circuit.
So it's like filling a bucket with water.
Exactly when the bucket overflows, it triggers a spike, a sudden burst of electrical activity that travels down the neuron's output channel and influences other connected neurons.
It's like a chain reaction of spikes, each one carrying a message.
Yeah.
This all happens incredibly fast, right?
We're talking milliseconds, and it's not just about the number of spikes. The precise timing of these spikes is what carries the real information. Think of it like a drummer playing a complex rhythm.
Okay.
The timing of each beat is crucial.
Okay, so we've got these spiking neurons, each one a tiny electrical drummer.
Yep.
How do we actually model them mathematically?
There are several mathematical models, each with varying levels of complexity and biological realism.
Okay.
One of the simplest is the leaky integrate and fire model, or LAF.
Okay.
It's like our bucket analogy, where the neuron integrates inputs until a threshold is reached and then fires.
So simple but effective.
Mm-hmm.
What about when we need a more detailed picture of the neuron's behavior?
Then we turn to models like the Isikevich model, which is more complex, but can capture a wider range of spiking patterns.
Right.
These models help us understand how neurons respond to different inputs and how they interact with each other.
And what about the most hardcore, biologically realistic model? The one that makes everyone go, whoa, that's intense.
That would be the Hodgkin-Huxley model.
Okay.
It's incredibly detailed, mimicking the neuron's internal chemistry and ion channels. It's the gold standard for biological realism, but it also requires serious computing power to simulate.
So choosing the right model depends on the task.
Right.
If we're doing a quick simulation, we might stick with a simpler LIF.
Right.
But if we're trying to understand the nuances of a specific type of neuron, then we might go for the Hodgkin-Huxley model.
It's like choosing the right tool for the job.
Exactly. Each model serves a different purpose.
Okay.
And understanding these differences helps us build and simulate SNNs more effectively.
Okay, so we've got our spiking neurons and we know how to model them. But how do we connect them together to build a network that can do something useful? That's where network architecture comes in.
Okay.
We can arrange these spiking neurons in different ways. Just like with traditional ANNs, we have feed-forward SNNs where information flows in one direction.
Okay.
These are great for tasks like image classification, where you have an input image and you want to identify what's in it.
And what about tasks that involve sequences like understanding speech or controlling a robot's movements?
That's where recurrent SNNs shine.
Okay.
They have feedback loops that allow information to circulate within the network, giving them a kind of memory. Think of it like trying to understand a sentence.
Yeah.
You need to remember the previous words to make sense of the current one.
Okay, so feed forward for straightforward tasks, recurrent for anything involving time sequences.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
But what about the connections themselves, the synapses that link these neurons together? What's their role?
Synapses and SNNs are dynamic and incredibly important.
Okay.
They can be excitatory.
Yeah.
Increasing the likelihood of the next neuron firing, or inhibitory, decreasing that likelihood.
So it's like a constant tug of war between excitation and inhibition, shaping the flow of information through the network.
A very dynamic tug of war. And the strength of these connections, or synaptic weights, can change over time. This is called synaptic plasticity.
Okay.
And it's the key to learning in SNNs.
Synaptic plasticity, got it.
Yeah.
But before we jump into how SNNs learn, let's talk about how information is encoded into these spikes in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do we go from, say, an image to a series of electrical pulses?
There are a few clever encoding schemes.
Okay.
One is rate coding.
Yeah.
Where information is represented by the firing rate of a neuron.
Okay.
Higher firing rate, stronger signal. It's like a neuron yelling louder when it has something important to say.
Simple and intuitive. But what if the exact timing of those spikes matters?
Mm-hmm.
Like in a song where the rhythm is everything.
Then we have temporal coding, where the precise timing of each spike carries information.
Okay.
Think of it like Morse code, where the dots and dashes convey meaning.
Right.
Or in our music analogy, the precise timing of each drum beat creates the rhythm.
And what if we need to represent something more complex, like a whole image or a concept?
That's where population coding comes in.
Okay.
We use a group of neurons, and the pattern of activity across those neurons represents the information. It's like an orchestra playing a symphony.
Okay.
Each instrument contributes to the overall sound.
Okay, so we've encoded our information into spikes using rate coding, temporal coding, or population coding. But how do we get it back out? How do we decode those spikes into something meaningful?
Decoding is like translating the language of spikes back into something we can understand.
Yeah.
We can count spikes over time.
Yeah.
Look for specific temporal patterns or analyze the activity across a population of neurons. The decoding method depends on the tag and the encoding scheme used.
So it's like having a secret code book for SNNs.
That's a good way to put it.
Now that we understand the basics of how SNNs are built and how information flows through them, let's talk about the real magic learning. How do we train these SNNs to do something useful?
That's where things get even more interesting. Learning in SNNs is all about the timing of spikes.
Okay.
We have different approaches, like supervised learning,
yeah,
where we train SNNs on labeled data.
Okay.
For example, if we want an SNN to tell the difference between cats and dogs,
right,
we show it tons of labeled images of cats and dogs,
right,
and let it adjust its connections based on its performance.
So it's like teaching a child with flashcards.
Yeah.
Are there specific algorithms for supervised learning in SNNs?
Absolutely. One is spike prop, which is inspired by the famous backpropagation algorithm used in traditional ANNs.
Okay.
It adjusts the strengths of connections between neurons based on errors in spike timing. Then there's the tempotron,
okay,
which is specifically designed for classifying things into two categories. It focuses on making the neuron fire when it should and stay silent when it shouldn't.
So it's like teaching the SNN to be a good listener, firing only when it recognizes the right pattern. But what about learning without labeled data? Like when we want the SNN to discover patterns on its own, like a scientist making observations about the world.
That's the realm of unsupervised learning.
Okay.
Here, SNNs leverage some incredibly elegant and biologically inspired learning rules. One of the most fascinating is spike timing dependent plasticity, or STDP.
STDP. Tell me more.
With STDP, the timing of spikes between two neurons determines whether their connection gets stronger or weaker.
Okay.
If a neuron consistently fires right before another, their connection strengthens.
Yeah.
If it fires after, the connection weakens.
So it's like the brain is saying, hey, these neurons seem to be talking to each other. Let's make it easier for them to communicate.
Exactly. This simple rule allows SNNs to self-organize and learn from their experiences without explicit instructions.
That's amazing. But what about situations where we need to train our SNN to interact with a dynamic environment, like learning to play a game or control a robot? That seems like a whole different ballgame.
You're right. And that's where reinforcement learning comes in.
Okay.
It's all about trial and error.
Yeah.
Rewards and penalties.
Okay.
Imagine training a dog.
Yeah.
You reward good behavior and discourage bad behavior.
Right.
Reinforcement learning for SNNs works similarly. The SNN interacts with its environment, receives feedback in the form of rewards or penalties, and learns to take actions that maximize rewards.
So we're essentially teaching the SNN to play the game of life. Are there any specific algorithms for this?
One approach is reward-modulated STDP.
Okay.
It combines the power of STDP with reward signals. It's like giving extra weight to the connections that led to positive outcomes, making them more likely to happen again in the future.
Okay, so we've covered supervised learning, unsupervised learning, and reinforcement learning. We've explored how SNNs can learn from data, discover patterns, and interact with their environment. Like, we've given them the tools to become intelligent agents. But all this learning, all these calculations, it must require some serious computing power, right?
You're right. Simulating SNNs, especially large-scale ones, can be computationally demanding.
Yeah.
That's why researchers are exploring different software and hardware solutions to make SNNs more practical and efficient.
So what are our options? Do we need to build a supercomputer just to run a simple SNN?
Not necessarily. Sure. We have specialized software simulators like Nest and Brian.
Okay.
Nest is a powerhouse for simulating large-scale SNNs handling millions of neurons with ease.
Wow.
Brian is known for its user-friendliness and flexibility.
So Nest for raw power, Brian for ease of use. Got it.
Yeah.
But what about when we want to move beyond simulations and build real-world applications? What kind of hardware do we need for that?
That's where the world of neuromorphic hardware comes in.
Okay.
These are chips specifically designed to run SNNs with incredible efficiency.
Like a brain on a chip. Tell me more.
Imagine chips that mimic the brain's architecture with spiking neurons and dynamic synapses built right in.
Wow.
Intel Loewe, for example, is a neuromorphic chip that can learn on the fly. Then there's IBM True North, known for its massive parallelism and ultra-low power consumption.
These chips sound like game changers. But what about FPGAs? Those programmable chips that engineers love to tinker with. Can we use those for SNNs as well?
Absolutely. FPGAs offer a great balance between flexibility and performance.
Okay.
They're not as specialized as neuromorphic chips.
Right.
But they can be reprogrammed to implement different SNN architectures.
So we've got our software simulators, our powerful neuromorphic chips, and our flexible FPGAs. It's like we have all the ingredients to build and run these amazing SNNs.
We're well equipped. And the next step is to explore the real-world applications where SNNs can truly shine.
Yeah.
That's what we'll dive into in the next part of our deep dive.
Stay tuned, folks. We're just getting started.
Yeah. Welcome back to our deep dive into spiking neural networks.
Before we went off, we were talking about all the awesome hardware and software that's making SNNs, you know, more and more practical.
Right.
But I'm really eager to hear about the real-world stuff. Where are SNNs actually making a difference today?
Well, one area where SNNs are already having a big impact is in neuromorphic computing. This is where we use SNNs to process sensory data in real time, mimicking the way our own brains handle information from the world around us.
Okay, that sounds cool, but give me an example. What does that look like in action?
Imagine a neuromorphic camera that uses an SNN to process visual information right on the sensor itself.
Oh, okay.
It can detect and track objects incredibly fast and efficiently without needing a powerful computer to do all the heavy lifting.
So it's like having a brain built right into the camera.
Yeah.
What kind of things could we use that for?
Well, the applications are pretty mind-blowing. Think about robots that can navigate through complex environments with ease, avoiding obstacles in real time, all thanks to their SNN-powered vision.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So robots that can see and react like humans, but without needing a giant backpack full of batteries. Ooh. Where else are SNNs making waves?
SNNs are also a natural fit for signal processing, where their ability to analyze patterns over time is really valuable.
Okay. I can see how that would be useful for things like analyzing stock market trends, or maybe even predicting earthquakes. Is that what you're thinking?
Exactly. But it goes even further. SNNs could revolutionize speech recognition, making it more accurate and responsive.
Wow.
They could even be used to analyze brain waves, helping us understand how our own minds work.
This is blowing my mind. So we've got robots with smaller vision, financial markets getting smarter, and maybe even a deeper understanding of the human brain, all thanks to SNNs. What else can these things do?
They're also proving incredibly valuable in robotics, particularly when it comes to controlling complex movements.
Okay, I'm picturing a robot that can dance the tango or maybe play a game of basketball. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
You're on the right track. SNNs can give robots a level of fluidity and adaptability that's hard to achieve with traditional control systems. They can react to changes in their environment quickly and smoothly, just like living creatures do.
So robots that can move with grace and precision, all thanks to their SNN brains. This is incredible.
Yeah.
What about computer vision? Can SNNs help us make sense of the visual world even better?
Absolutely. Computer vision relies heavily on understanding sequences of images, like videos.
Right.
And SNNs are perfect for that because they can analyze temporal information so effectively.
So are we talking about self-driving cars that can predict the movements of pedestrians or maybe security systems that can recognize suspicious activity in real time?
Those are just a couple of the possibilities. Mm. SNNs could also help us create more immersive virtual reality experiences, design medical imaging systems that can detect subtle abnormalities, and even develop AI systems that can understand and generate art.
Okay, I'm officially convinced SNNs are the future. But hold on, we talked about some challenges earlier. You know, things like training complexity, scalability issues, and hardware limitations. Aren't those going to hold us back?
They're definitely hurdles.
Yeah.
But researchers are developing some very clever solutions. One exciting area is in advanced learning algorithms. We're taking inspiration from both deep learning and neuroscience, combining the best of both worlds.
So it's like teaching SNNs to speak the language of data more fluently.
Exactly. We're finding ways to incorporate techniques like convolutional layers, which are great for image processing, and backpropagation, which is a powerful way to train neural networks into the world of SNNs. At the same time, we're exploring new learning rules inspired by the brain, things like synaptic plasticity and neuromodulation.
Hold on, neuromodulation, what's that?
It's a way to fine-tune how neurons learn by using virtual chemicals that mimic the effects of neurotransmitters in the brain. Think of it like giving our SNNs a cognitive boost.
Wow, that's fascinating. So we're not just building SNNs, we're giving them brain chemistry too. What about hardware? Are we stuck waiting for those fancy neuromorphic chips to become more widely available?
Neuromorphic chips are definitely a game changer, but there are other options as well. Researchers are designing more efficient and scalable architectures for SNNs so that they can run on conventional hardware with better performance. We're also exploring the mind-blowing possibilities of quantum computing for SNNs.
Whoa, quantum SNNs. Now that's getting futuristic. What could we do with that kind of power?
Imagine simulating massive SNNs with billions of neurons pushing the boundaries of AI and creating systems that can tackle problems we can't even imagine today.
Okay, I'm trying to wrap my head around that. But before we get too carried away with all the possibilities,
yeah,
let's talk about something you mentioned earlier, standardization and benchmarking. Why is that important?
Right now, the field of SNNs is a bit like a Wild West. There are so many different tools, simulators, learning algorithms, and hardware platforms, and they don't always play nicely together.
So it's like everyone's speaking a different dialect of the SNN language.
The perfect analogy. Standardization would create a common framework, a universal translator, so to speak, making it easier for researchers to share their work, collaborate, and build on each other's progress.
It's like creating a roadmap for the SNN community so everyone can travel in the same direction.
Exactly. And benchmarking is about setting up standard tests and metrics to evaluate the performance of different SNN approaches. It helps us track progress, identify the most promising directions, and see which SNNs are the champions in different areas.
So it's like having an SNN Olympics.
Yeah.
We can see which SNNs are the fastest, the most efficient, and the most accurate at solving different problems.
Yeah, got it. Standardization and benchmarking are key to accelerating the development and adoption of SNNs. They help us move from a collection of individual efforts to a unified collaborative field that's poised to revolutionize AI.
This has been an incredible journey so far. We've covered so much ground, from the biological inspiration behind SNNs to their mind-blowing applications and the exciting developments that are pushing this field forward. What gets you most excited about the future of SNNs?
For me, it's the potential of SNNs to bridge the gap between artificial and biological intelligence. We're not just building machines that mimic the structure of the brain. We're starting to understand and replicate the fundamental principles of how it learns, adapts, and interacts with the world.
So it's like we're cracking the code of intelligence itself.
In a way, yes. And this opens up a whole new frontier of possibilities. Imagine SNNs that can seamlessly integrate with biological systems, restoring lost sensory function, enhancing cognitive abilities, or even creating new forms of intelligence that we can't even imagine yet.
Wow, that's pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But on a more practical level, where do you see SNNs having the biggest impact in the near future?
I believe SNNs will revolutionize edge computing, where energy efficiency and real-time processing are paramount. We're talking about smart devices, wearables, and autonomous systems that can perform complex tasks without needing to be tethered to powerful computers.
So, smartphones that can recognize your emotions, drones that can navigate through dense forests and self-driving cars, that can anticipate traffic patterns, all powered by energy-sipping SNNs.
Exactly. And that's just the beginning. SNNs are also poised to make significant contributions in fields like robotics medicine and even neuroscience itself. It's a virtuous cycle where SNNs help us understand the brain, and the brain inspires new and better SNNs.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm ready for the SNN revolution. But before we get too carried away, let's take a moment to reflect on what we've learned and where we go from here.
I agree. A little reflection is always a good thing.
We're back for the final part of our SNN deep dive, and it's been quite a journey, hasn't it?
It has.
From those tiny spiking neurons to the grand vision of, you know, SNN's revolutionizing AI, we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, we have. And before we wrap things up, I think it's important to take a step back and consider the bigger picture. You know, we've talked about all the incredible things SNNs can do.
Yeah.
But as with any powerful technology, there are also important ethical considerations.
That's a great point. As SNNs become more sophisticated, more brain-like,
right,
we have to think carefully about the implications.
Exactly. We need to ask ourselves some tough questions.
Yeah.
What does it mean to build machines that can learn and adapt like living beings? What are the potential risks and benefits of creating systems that can potentially surpass human intelligence in certain areas?
These are questions that philosophers have been wrestling with for centuries.
Right.
And now they're becoming very real and very urgent as AI advances.
They are, and there are no easy answers.
Right.
But that's precisely why it's so important to have these conversations now while the technology is still relatively young.
Yeah.
We need to engage with ethicists, policymakers, and the public at large to ensure that SNNs are developed and used responsibly.
I completely agree. It's not enough to just focus on the technical aspects. We need to think about the societal impact, the potential consequences, and the ethical guidelines that will shape the future of this technology.
And that's where the interdisciplinary nature of SNN research is so crucial.
Yeah.
We need neuroscientists, computer scientists, engineers, ethicists, philosophers, and even artists and writers all working together to guide the development of SNNs in a direction that benefits humanity.
It's like we need a new renaissance, a fusion of science, art, and ethics to navigate this uncharted territory.
What a beautiful way to put it. And I believe that by embracing this collaborative spirit, we can ensure that SNNs are used to enhance our lives, expand our understanding of the universe, and create a more just and equitable world.
Well said. So to our listeners out there, we leave you with this challenge. Don't just marvel at the technical wonders of SNNs. Engage with the ethical questions they raise.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the kind of future you want to see and how SNNs can be a force for good in that future.
And remember, this is just the beginning of the story. The field of SNNs is full of mysteries, waiting to be uncovered challenges, waiting to be overcome, and possibilities that are limited only by our imagination.
So stay curious, keep exploring, and join us on this incredible journey into the future of intelligence. Thanks for diving deep with us.